So welcome to the second day of the 21st Gulasch Programmiernacht, to the talk Unlimited Free Accounts, Your Own Mail Server in 60 Minutes. We all use emails every day, and now we are going to see a talk about how to set up our own email server. The speaker is Benjamin, who graduated here in Karlsruhe at the Karlsruhe Institute of Technology, and is now working as a consulting person, and yes. That's it.
Thank you very much for the introduction. To be fair, I didn't give him much more than that. I didn't think it was relevant. Okay, thank you everyone for being here. I already told you that it will be quite a packed talk with a lot of information. Ideally, there is a live coding session of about 50 minutes, but given the network issues, maybe I will just talk about it. I will upload the code to do it yourself to the net. You can download it tomorrow from my blog or somewhere, or GitHub. So you can do it yourself. It's actually quite easy. You just have to repeat the steps here, and I will give you the explanation for why you have to do it. Briefly, who am I? I'm Benjamin, as my Harold already said. I'm an IT consultant, currently working for TNG Technology Consulting. I should mention that because they are nice enough to pay for me being here as a Fortbildung, which I find great. So I wear the t-shirt and I use their PowerPoint presentation slides. No, they're awesome. Also, in my free time, I do a lot of blogging and I organize meetups. So if you ever have the need to get the nicest and greatest stuff from the cloud or from AI, then come to our meetup. It's AI Cloud Innovation in Karlsruhe. Yeah, so why do we do this? Actually, I don't know why you would do it, but I know that you have to be a bit weird to want to do it because, I mean, it's a mail server and there's so much stuff you have to do for it, and really have to be a bit kind of weird to actually want to deal with that in your free time. I mean, for me, it started out when I started out with free email accounts like everybody else, like AOL, Gmail, and stuff like that. So back in the day, and then I started reading the news, and that wasn't too healthy. You read stuff like, Gmail is reading your emails, they're scanning it for advertisements, there are actually persons who read your emails, they're selling the information and stuff like that. And at some point, I didn't want to have my emails on Gmail or somewhere else. I mean, most email providers do this. There are some who don't, or presumably don't, but they are, of course, not free. And by then, I was already down the path of doing it myself. And I think it's fun, so. But my main reason was privacy. And of course, cost. I mean, you can have free email accounts, but by now you have most of the time some kind of cost associated with it. Either it's your privacy or it's reading ads that by now are injected into your mails. And some providers, I mean, that's really fucked up. And if you then want something that's not with ads, then you have to at least pay 50, 60, 70 euros per year. And then this comes without all the premium features that you have to pay extra for. Yeah, I don't want to do that either. Okay, but if you decide to do it yourself, you will encounter one problem. And this is that you have to realize that you have not only one problem, but you have many problems. And this is just because, this is because a mail server, that's not one thing. A mail server is comprised of a lot of moving parts that interact together and they influence each other. And you have, in the beginning, you basically have no idea where to start and what to choose. And everything is configured differently every part of that has its different way of doing it. And even then, when you arrive at, okay, I have to use these parts, then you have, for every part, you have 10 or 20 alternatives that you can use. For your email storage, you can use a file system, you can use an IMAP server. That are two completely different ways of doing it. And then if you decide, okay, I need an IMAP server because I want to use it with Thunderbird, okay, which IMAP server do I use? There are 10, and like 8 are not maintained, and 2 are maintained, and whatever. That's so much stuff that you have to do before you get it done. Yeah, so this, for me, that was a big hurdle. And I mean, I did that originally during my studies, so I really had time to do it. If you start without any guidance, then oh, Jesus. And of course, most of the documentation that you can read online is either outdated or doesn't apply to you because you want to do something else. So what do we want to do today? I want to give you one example of how to do it, so, to just maybe lessen the anxiety of doing it a bit and give you a starting point from where you can then migrate into what you want to do or to adapt this solution to your needs. Ideally, I wanted to do it online, but apparently no net. So I'm very, very sorry for that. I will just show you what to do. Yeah, but that actually that was not the problem before because I already got an IP address before. Okay, I will retry. Oh, okay, I got net. So now let's try something else if that also works. Yes, okay, great. All right, so we can do it online. That is a big load off my chest. Thanks for whoever was that who fixed it. Okay, so where did I leave off? Yep, okay. So this will be quite a process. And so it will be a bit complicated, and I can't go in a lot of detail on every step. So if you have questions, just ask them right away. Because again, ideally this talk takes me 59 minutes, and after that there is only a limited amount of time to ask questions. So ask questions immediately when you have them, because the more questions you ask, the more understanding you build, the closer you are to actually getting a mail server running. If I just read it out to you and you don't get anything of it, then you just wasted an hour. Okay, by the way, why would you not do that? First of all, of course, is reliability. You will set up a mail server, maybe for the first time, but also if you do it for the 10th time, that in big organizations that sell that service, every part of it will have at least one person who gets paid to service that part all out, all the time. You will do it in your free time with the limited understanding that you have, or maybe you are an expert, then that doesn't apply to you, but it certainly applies to me. And because I only have limited understanding of this, yeah, okay, if you ask me some in-depth question about, hey, why should I use that kind of service in that setting on PostFix, I will go like, yeah, read the manual, I don't know. And then there will things that there will be things that just happen, like you have to reboot your server because there is a downtime on your provider because he has to do some updates, or you do have to do some updates, or there is a certificate issue and stuff like that. So there will be out time, and you will not save time by doing this. I mean, if you're an expert, maybe, but I would suggest you don't save time with it. So only do it if you really want to do it, and if you see a lot of benefits for you that outweigh not paying for that service and doing it yourself because of like privacy reasons. Okay. Yeah, and there is one thing I have to mention. When you start your own mail server, you have to put that thing on the internet. And as we all know, the internet is not the most friendly of places. So everyone and their mother will be after you. You will receive so much spam. You will receive mails from scammers. You will potentially be hacked, although the chance for that is fairly low if you're only doing it for your own purposes and if you're not running a Microsoft product. By the way, don't run a Microsoft product. I mean, not unless you're paid for it really well. It's just not worth your lifetime. The last time a friend of mine put an Exchange server on the internet, it took exactly 5 minutes until it was taken over by someone. And he was out of the house by then, so that this thing did distribute spam for hours until he could get back and shut it down by just plugging it out. Yeah, okay, so also you might be, and I'm not an expert, I'm not an attorney or something, but you might be liable for anything that that thing that just got hacked does, so be aware of that. Okay, if you still want to do it, let's briefly go over the core components of a mail server, or at least the core components of a mail server that are important now, because yes, every of these components that are here have way more detail to them. If you look at Postfix, that thing is not one thing, but it's like 20 different things that all operate together. I will not go into that detail because for now it's not really important and I don't know it. No, I will just give you the most important things right now. So, I mean, if we think of what happens when there is when a mail arrives at our server, obviously it has to find that server. And for that, we have to set up a DNS entry. We have to give it the name of our server, and we have to put an MX entry in there. Or, you, strictly speaking, you don't have to put an MX entry in Trail, but it's really nice to do that. I will go into that detail a bit later. But when the mail then arrives at your server, we of course need some component that will take over the email and read it and decide what to do with it. And this component is Postfix, or the mail delivery agent, as you will read in the specific literature. And also, yes, I know this is strictly speaking not correct, but let's leave it at that. The mail delivery agent will take over the email and decide, okay, what will I do with it? Most likely, it will first hand it over to a spam checking process, like in our case, RSpamD, and then decide, okay, is there a user for that on my server that I have to deliver that mail to? And for that, it will basically, or in our case, it will ask the mail storage, Dovecot, hey, can I store this mail with you? And Dovecot will either say no, the mail delivery agent will reject the mail, or it will say yes, and then here it is. Mail storage, in our case, a binary called Dovecot, will store the email and hand it out to you via IMAP, so you can access it with your Thunderbird or Apple Mail or whatever you use. And it will know that you as a user exist because it will read the information from somewhere. And in our case, we will use an LDAP server. This might be a kind of a controversial decision because LDAP servers are one of the worst design pieces of software that you can find. The protocol to use them is so old and so weird, but you can think of them as a big dictionary. That's always how I like to think of it. It's a big dictionary, and in that dictionary there are entries, and if you find something in there is information. So that's how I like to think about it. But it's not a dictionary. But it helps. Okay. So two other things that we will encounter over and over again in this talk are the Docker deployment, because I Dockerized all these components. That just helps me getting away from the operating system versions, because normally, of course, you can install these things on your operating system, but then you're bound to, you're kind of bound to the versions that the operating system has, or that the distribution has. Yes, you can install other versions, but it's a pain. And I don't. I wanted to use the Dockerized versions. Also, if something goes wrong and I screw it up, I just can delete the container and get a new container, and I didn't mess with the with the host OS. So therefore, I did write some Docker images specifically for Apache DS Dovecot, Postfix, RSpam, and Zogo. This is actually not hard to do. And you will find all of these images on Docker Hub and on my blog. And most importantly, you will not only find the images, but also the code on for how to build images. Because there are a lot of images for these binaries on GitHub, Docker Hub, sorry. But you will not want to use them because they don't deliver the code, they are not official images, and you don't know what's in there. I mean, could be anything. Could be a Dovecot, or could be something that just hands your email out to some Russian server. Don't know. So be careful what you do. Again, operating a mail server is dangerous. And be sure that your images actually are this kind of software that you want to use. Of course, for some things, there are official images, and I also do use them because I kind of trust them, but yeah. All right, then what we all will do all the time during this talk is for the images, because I will briefly go over the images, but the images are always the same thing. What you do to build them is you take a base image, you install your dependencies on it, you copy a few configuration files on it, and then you tell it how to run. That's everything. That's how every of these images is built. They are a bit different every time, but not much. And the most important thing that you always have to do is you have to put some kind of configuration in there to redirect the logging output to standard out, so you can read it in the Docker logs. Or at least that's how I do it. And I will not write all the instructions, of course, myself now, because that would take forever. No, I use Ansible, which is a configuration management tool, which is a bit more declarative in its usage. So you don't say Docker runs for stuff, for instance, but you hand over a file to Ansible and say, look, Ansible, this is how I want it to be. And then Ansible goes and does the necessary steps to make it that way. And the lower box is one example of a simple script that, for instance, pulls up the Apache LLAP server. It's a lot at first, but actually what it does is it says only, hey, take my image, hand out the port 389, and save the stuff that you save somewhere where I can access it. By the way, to answer the question beforehand, I don't like Docker volumes, and I don't think it's necessary for a single server. It's way easier for me maybe only, to back up that stuff if it's bind-mounted to somewhere of the host operating system, especially for Dovecot. And I will get into that later. And all the Ansible roles, by the way, I should mention that too. You could now write all these declarative instructions into one file, but it would be a lot very convoluted. So there is a way to partition them into reusable chunks. And these chunks are then called roles. And here is a file structure of an example role. It's the matching Apache DS role. And it just says here, look, I have my LDAP role. And in this are no files that I have to upload. Obviously, I'm not mapping any files or copying any files here. But this is my task, and this is this file. And then there are also some variables, but this file, the file of the variable is really uninteresting because it only contains this variable. And then I use a so-called playbook, and another file to just reference that role and say, okay, on my server, please do that. Okay, I will do this on the aforementioned Azure VM. I hope it's still online because a few hours ago it wasn't. And Azure portal was also down. I hope it's now up and I can show it to you. I pre-installed something that's not relevant to the mail server. I pre-installed Docker. That's not really interesting for the mail server itself. I put up a Docker bridge and some basic tools like Vim and HTOP and stuff like that. And the base image is an Ubuntu 22.04, which also doesn't really matter. You can use Docker on any Linux or any modern Linux. And again, I will run this mail server on my fun domain, which is molybdan for man.de. And also, I pointed that address to this Docker VM, to this Azure VM, and also I pointed the SMTP DNS entry to the Azure VM. And in the I created a record for the MX entry. And as we mentioned before, the MX entry is where any other server on the internet who wants to send mail to you will look first on. When he asks, hey, where should I send this mail to, then it will look in this MX entry, and this MX entry goes to smtp.molybdan.de. All right, that's everything for the introduction. Now let's get started with the code. First thing I will do is actually something that I only have to use at the end, but I will do it now because it's super convenient to have the certificate already now. And then we will, all right, we will start with the first thing that we will set up, and that's the LDAP server. That's actually the task that we have seen before. That's our user directory. Now you don't have to use an LDAP server. You can use a mail server with the, for instance, the accounts on the virtual machine itself. But that doesn't scale really well, and it's also not really good for maintaining stuff. So I decided to use an LDAP server. And then there are three basically main LDAP servers that you can use. That's OpenLDAP, 389 Directory Server, and Apache DS. Of course, there's Active Directory, but that again is a Microsoft product, and I'm already happy if that virtual machine works. So, seriously, Apache DS has the advantage of bringing a nice GUI with it, so an Eclipse-based GUI that helps you manage it. And I will use now this GUI to Yeah, that doesn't look like the internet connection is really back. Name resolution error. Okay. Yeah. Okay. In this case, I will scrap it for now. Unfortunately, I'm very sorry about that. But without network, there's no live demo. I will just talk about what I want to do, or what I would do, and basically I would now go and execute my prepared scripts. Normally, you would not do that. You would just use something like this, where you just put all your roles into one list and then execute that. But because I wanted to do it step by step, I put every role into one file, so it's always the same, but with like only one role, or the LDAP has only one role. And yeah, I'm sorry. Better? Even better like this? Okay. Everybody cool with that? Okay. All right. So the first task would be then to bring up the LDAP server. Now I have to look for it. Where is it? LDAP here. Okay. So again, that's the file that we have seen before, and it just brings up the LDAP server. And the next thing that we would do is we go to the configuration tool. Yeah, I can only show that on an Apache LDAP, LDAP server. Okay, what we then would do is create a new partition in that. And that's a bit tricky to find. Actually, it's not hard to do, but it's tricky to find because I want in that dictionary tree, I would say, because if you follow the keys, then you get like a tree structure, and I want a new branch. And to create that new root branch, you have to go into the configuration. You have to right-click here and go open configuration. And when you... What? Is it back? That can't be. The LDAP server is not running. Yeah, whatever. No, it's not back. OK, then you right-click on the configuration. And then you add your new tree. And that's very convenient for you to save all your stuff in that tree and not use another tree that's maybe used by the internal structure or something like that. Now, LDAP in itself is tricky a bit because you have to design that tree somehow, and it's really corporate focused. So it will give you and the leaves of the tree, they have to have specific classes which only allow specific attributes. That's quite nasty, but most of the time I just create an organization that has my family name, and then I create an organizational unit that has a user's name, and then I create all the users underneath that. If you want to look for how to create a user, I use init.org person. Which has most of the stuff that I need, mostly the common name and the user password. Okay, once we did set that up, we continue to the next piece of software, and in my case, that's the mail storage. For mail storage, again, we will use an IMAP server that can then can be accessed through IMAP with your normal Thunderbird or Apple Mail or whatever. And again, the script is the same as before, or as mentioned, it just copies the configuration files there and then starts the container. Maybe one thing that should be noted, yes, it of course uses again the container by me, and it also hands in the certificates that the program that I started before will give you, and it mounts the configuration for the mail to the host system. I find that convenient because it then can access the mail files directly and can backup them directly. But honestly, everybody does backups differently. And that's... So should I sum that up, or... so it's 20 minutes left. Okay. Okay. Because he just held up all this, the papers that he had, and it says 5, 10, and 15, and I could choose. Okay. but thank you very much. Yeah, okay. For smaller installations, you will not have really performance issues with your mail server. So I think it's really handy to have all the mails in one file. Not all the mails in one file. Every mail in one file that you can copy and paste and recover from if something goes wrong, because something will go wrong. And Yes, there's pure text files. But it's pure text files. Actually, you can put this mail ending on them, and then it will be readable with Thunderbird. I think, yeah. But I never did that. Yeah. So there are other ways of storing it with Dovecot. There are more high-performance options. Again, unless you have dozens or hundreds of users, you will, or really loads of emails, you will not get into run into the problem that you have performance issues. Okay. So we have, of course, to hand over the configuration file for Dovecot, and this is only interesting in two or three places. We tell Dovecot, okay, we want IMAP, because that's why we install Dovecot. And also important, we have to tell Dovecot we do not only want IMAP, we also want this protocol called LMTP, which is more a local protocol for shipping mails around. And that will later be used by our MDA, the postfix, to hand the mail over to Dovecot. We will accept two ways of login, plain and login. Plain sounds dangerous, but we will, of course, use SSL and SSL only. For determining if a user can log in, if a user has a mailbox on the server, we tell Dovecot to look into the LDAP directory. That's a separate configuration file, which I will open soon. And the rest is fairly standard. This file you will only need this if you serve multiple domains. So don't be led astray. Again, we have to log to the console to be able to read the mails and to read the log files on Docker. And now we come to the meat of the configuration file, which is these two lines. And they work in conjunction. And maybe first, the lower line, it says, please save my mails to the folder, to the user folder and subfolder maildir, and do it in the format maildir. This string in the front, this is really important because you can put other things there and it will use a completely different format. And don't ever change it after the fact. There are tools to convert mailboxes into other mailboxes, but you can't just change that after you once used it first and saved maildir. But you might have noticed that there is a problem. The users don't have user directories there on the server because all our users only exist in LDAP and not on the server itself. This is why we tell the Dovecot, okay, the user directories or the home directories of the users are here in var, spool, mail, vhosts. Then the domain that we use in the email, in this case, molybdeninformain.de, and then the username. And this will be their home directory. This is also where they might drop other things, like sieve scripts or so for filtering. This will go there. Again, REST is fairly simple. Of course, we will only accept SSL connections with the certificates that we handed in before. Fairly standard. And this stuff is for, if you then read the configuration files yourself later, this stuff is just for telling Dovecot that some folders are special, like your drafts folder, or your junk folder, or your trash folder. It makes it easier also for the Thunderbird or so to find that folder. Okay, once that is started, we have something to put our mails into. But we need something to accept our mail or send our mail. And this this piece of software is called the actual mail server, the mail transfer agent, mail delivery agent, whatever you. This is all in there, and this will accept mails from the internet, put it into Dovecot, or accept your mails and hand it out. But our configuration in Ansible is fairly standard. You just take, again, all the configuration files, put it on the server, and then tell Ansible, OK, now please start a container. The interesting part, of course, is what's in the configuration files. And there are many of them. Because apparently, and rather annoyingly, handing mails around is super hard. There are so many things that go on and so many rules. So I will try to simplify it a bit. First of all, what you should do, you should kind of disregard the master configuration. Because there's so much stuff in there that you actually don't need. You only need one thing and for your setup, and that's most of the time this line here, this submission line. And that you should comment that, and that basically tells postfix, okay, we open another port. On that special port, the 587, we will later accept mails from our users. Not from the internet, from our own users. And that's it for that file. In most distributions, just leave that file alone. Most of the time, you don't have to screw with it. Much more important is the main configuration. And in this configuration, we have to first make one important distinction. The mail server can either serve mail for like itself, like for the smtp.modbnformain.de domain, which is its own host name. But it also can serve mails for completely different domains. You can put into whatever the google.com domain SMX server, you can put smtp.modbnformain.de. That's completely legal. You can do that. And many people most of the time use that. So you have to tell postfix somehow that you are hosting mail for a completely virtual domain. Not your own domain, but a virtual domain. Still, your domain in this case is modbnformain.de, and your host name is smtp.yourdomain, and this is just filled here from there. But we will not really accept mails for that, because we say, okay, now my destination only, I will only treat localhost like that. For everything else, I will use the virtual mailbox settings. So me myself, I don't really accept mail. But I accept mail for all these virtual domains that I host. And you have to use these three settings for that. It's all, first of all, it's a virtual domain mailbox domains. This is a list. You can go and add domains for that. Of course, in these domains, there has to be an MX entry that points to the server. And when we then receive a domain for that, we will use the virtual transport setting to hand this over to Dovecot. Then you will have in your mail server files that have aliases in them. That's, for instance, say, okay, your user Peter is also available under schlafkätzchen@modbnformain.de. And you can put that in there. And for the virtual domains that you use, these are special virtual files. And they go into this one. All right, I see a lot of stunned faces. Are there any questions right now? Too many? Yes, please.
So do we, if you want to have like a catch-all email, is
this
via the alias
or? Yeah, you can do it via the aliases. Yes, that's possible, but you can do it actually multiple ways. None. You shouldn't have a catch-all email, because it will catch all email, and people will try to send email to whatever username at your server. If you look at the log files later at your server, it's just this username, that username, that username. They will constantly probe your servers for usernames. You should have two very important addresses or 3. This is the Postmaster, Abuse, and Webmaster. These are recommended by the RFC. And actually, even spammers don't use that. So I on the mail servers that I administrate, I have never received spam on these three email addresses. But you, I always keep them available, and I don't even spam filter them, because if someone wants to report an abuse on my email, I have to be able to react. Of course, for my personal email server, I will just decline the request because I sent the email. But maybe I misconfigured something and my server is handing out spam, then someone could use the abuse at email address to send a request for me to delete that. Yeah, you should absolutely have these three exceptions in your files. Yeah, other questions up to now? Okay. Yes.
So let's say your server is like down and not working.
Yeah.
Where does the mail come from the outside? Does it just like disappear into the void?
No. Good question. So the mail from outside will not be sent to you in this case. When a mail server takes a mail from you, it's basically like a mail carrier. He now has the responsibility to carry that mail to its destination. And he will try its, a proper mail server, which will try its best to do that. So if he can't reach the destination, he will try again with a back off like 5 minutes, 15 minutes, or whatever, most likely 15 minutes. Then he will try again, and again, and again, and again, until some limit is reached. But most mail servers will use very high limits and try to deliver that mail really thoroughly. All right. Okay. Again, if you have questions, just ask them. Okay. Now, when we go to use our Thunderbird to send mail through that mail server, that mail server also has to know that, whether it will accept this mail from us or not. And here we use a shortcut, because of course you could now configure the postfix also to go to the LDAP server and ask for whether this user exists or not. But that's actually quite a hassle, because the format for that is still different than from Dovecot. And what I do instead is use a nice feature of Dovecot, and Dovecot allows to distribute that information to the mail server. So it will make a SASL port available, a socket available, where the postfix can then ask Dovecot, hey, does that user exist? And that's what we do here. So, of course, we will also only allow SSL authentication, because otherwise we would send our passwords through plain text over the internet. That's not recommended. And we will use the high setting for the TLS ciphers. You can screw around with the setting a lot. People like to do that. I read somewhere that high is a good setting, but you can specify every single cipher there if you want to. No anonymous mail, and use TLS, and we will ask Dovecot for whether that account actually exists. Of course, we have to also hand it over the certificates. And then, basically, now our mail server would be running. And not maybe the first email, but certainly the second and third and 100th mail would be spam that it receives. So now we have to do something about spam. And there, this is a really big problem, obviously, you all know. But it's not an easy problem, because the spam, sometimes it's dumb, sometimes it's really sophisticated. And So we have to take a multi-layered approach to actually try to filter it. We will not be able to filter it completely, obviously, but we will do our best. And the first line of defense against spam is actually, again, PostFix or the mail server itself. When it receives mail, it, of course, can, it has to read the mail. And in that instance, it already can try to block stuff. For instance, it can block non-full qualified senders. If the sender just says, hey, I'm Joe, then my mail server says, okay, go away. If the recipient is not full qualified, then if you say, hey, I want to send a message to Peter, and then my mail server goes, okay, Peter who? Do you know that guy? No, it's just Peter. Nah, Peter's not good enough. And stuff like that. It can reject if... obviously, that's an important thing if you don't know the sender domain. If you're not responsible for accepting mail for that domain, don't accept that mail. If you don't know the recipient domain, also don't accept that mail and stuff like that. But of course, we also have to accept some mail, and the mail that we accept first is that come that yes. I come again. The unknown sender, this one. If you send a mail to the to someone, you have to specify the domain. For instance, like gmail.com. And if it's like xyz.com, and the mail server can't determine what that domain is, if it can't resolve that domain, then it will not accept that domain, that mail, sorry. But it will, by the way, these conditions are evaluated in order. And that's why permit in my networks is up top. Now, this is actually a controversial setting because this will permit everyone from this list to just send mail without any checks. Obviously, that's a bit problematic, but it always worked for me. And if you don't put something on the internet in there, but maybe just your local net, then yeah, okay, someone can hack something on your local network and then send unlimited mail. Yeah, okay. I accept that risk. Also, I accept the Zazzle authenticated people, and these are the ones who will, these are my users who will authenticate via the submission port that we mentioned before, and I will just accept mails from them. Maybe that's not wise, depending on the kind of users that you have, but for this server, it's most likely only me, so yeah. Okay. Obviously, also reject people that you don't know, and otherwise permit the stuff. And then our second line of defense. Or are there any more questions to that filter? By the way, there are other settings. For instance, you can do Halo recipient restrictions that actually would come before. But they don't make a lot of sense because in the implementation of PostFix, it's like he will read a chunk of email first. And when he has read that, you can also already do all of these checks. So you could theoretically do checks before that, but in practice, you won't. So I'll just put that in here. Yes?
One thing, like my little attempts at doing the mail thing were always really hard is not getting filtered as spam by other people.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to set up like the DMARC records in your DNS and whatever. Will you get to that or?
Hardly, because when I designed this talk, I just wanted to get it running. Yeah. I can say something for that. So this is, and what he mentions is the other side of the equation. Of course, we don't want to accept spam, but the other people don't want to accept spam either. So they will also be very thorough on checking who you are. And they will do, of course, the same stuff that we do, but they might do other things as well. And basically, running a mail server is building up a kind of credibility. If you have this credibility, then people will accept mails from you. Or if you just are Gmail, then you have to accept mails from Gmail because most people use Gmail. Okay, then you can't do anything, even if they send spam to you. And of course, you can decline it, but then you will block out like 30% of the internet. But that's not really productive. But you, as a small mail server operator, you have to jump through their hoops and then build up a like credibility. And they will, depending on who it is, they will use other things to determine your credibility, like this SPF record, which is another record in your DNS entry that can determine from whom, from this domain, should mails be accepted. And you can use another technique that's DMARC, where you publish a hash of a public key in your DNS entry again, and every email from that mail server now has to be signed with that public key. And when the public key matches to what you have published in DNS, then that will build trust. And but actually, most of the spammers now use DMARC too, so it's not really good. 5 minutes. Oh, right. Okay. Are you sure? Okay. We have to speed up a bit. Okay. So they will use other factors, like some will even require you to have a web page that they actually check then if there is a web page running on this domain, and if not, then you will drop out of their favor. And especially Microsoft is really, really dickish with accepting mail. They will block your mail for like no reason, and they will not tell you why. And they will very hardly put you back into the whitelist. They will just do that at random, and you can do basically nothing about it. And then they will have this great, oh, I want to unlock my domain page, and that won't work because it's a Microsoft page. Yeah, that's actually how it works. Okay, our second line of defense, just to mention that, and then we will skip the web interface because it's we won't be able to show it anyway. The second line of defense is RSpamD. RSpamD is actually a fairly modern spam checking possibility. Before that, there was Spam Assassin, but that was really hard to configure. RSpamD, if you just want to use it, it's really easy to configure. You just use the standard configuration files, and you do stuff like tell it where your antivirus container is, which is just like this line. And then, of course, you put the logging again on the console, and you tell it where Redis is. So really, really basic stuff. The only thing where you have to think for a moment is if you want to just use one process for RSpamD, then you have to put this line in, because RSpamD can be scaled to very high loads, but you won't have that loads, hopefully. And then you can use just one process, and then you disable the normal worker and use the proxy worker to just scan the mail. So that's the most important line here. And of course, the socket where you put it in. But that's the standard socket. I just copied everything else. Okay, and then PostFix will send the emails to RSpamD, and that will check it for viruses and check it for spam. And if it is confident enough that this is spam, then it will actually reject the email. You can configure that, and I like to immediately reject the mail to keep the connection from the client that wants to send me the mail open, because some email guru Peter Heinlein once said in one of his talks that it is advantageous for legal reasons to immediately reject email, because then it's like you haven't accepted it. No way of knowing that if that's true, but he said it, and he makes his money by administering mail servers. By the way, there's a really good book on Postfix and Dovecot from him, so I'm not affiliated or anything. He doesn't even know I exist, but these books are really good. Okay, then we will skip the Zogo part, because that would be showing it, and I can't show it, obviously. And go directly to the questions. Yes, please.
How resource intensive would you say is running a mail server?
Let's say on a
tiny computer, even the Raspberry?
Yeah, can do that. If you only use a basic Postfix and Dovecot, it can run on very, very little. The resource intensive things are more like spam filtering, RSpamD, ClamAV, obviously, the virus checker. But the Postfix and Dovecot are super optimized. Other questions?
Is Zogo a webmail interface?
Yeah, now Zogo is actually a groupware. There are many groupwares out there, but I like Zogo. It brings CartDAV and CalDAV sync possibility. It has contacts calendar built in. It has a material design interface. It has not all the perks of, let's say, here. What's the file sharing thing called? Come again? Nextcloud. Yeah, Nextcloud. But actually, I hate Nextcloud for its mail client. That thing just doesn't work. And Zogo is built for mail, and I use that. It's just a personal choice. You can do whatever you want. Because when the REST runs, plugging in Zogo is just pointing it to the mail server, like your Thunderbird client. It basically does the same thing. Yes?
Running my own mail server since about 10 years, I can confirm the most difficult part is to get other people accept your mail. Like Telekom, T-Online has a dedicated email address you can write to. That's a huge advantage. As you told, there's no way to contact Microsoft.
Yeah.
And Microsoft, you don't know on which spam list you're listed on by the previous owner of the IP address.
I mean, I don't want to suggest that Microsoft makes a business out of it to reject your mail, because then you need a Microsoft account. But it's something you should probably think about. Yeah.
I have to say that there's a great tool like called Mail Checker. There you can send an email to them, and it checks if other people will accept it, just to make it easier for other people here.
There is also
their own server.
The MX toolbox or something it's called, where there are is a collection of tools that you can use also to verify SSL, verify spam checking, stuff like that. I think he was first. sorry.
I've been running my own mail server for about 2 years, and I'm using a really amazing project called Simple NixOS Mail Server.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you heard
of it? That's great. Yeah, I've heard of it, haven't used it. By the way, my solution runs on Docker and on my Docker images, because I like to use them and I like to fiddle with it. If you want that solution in a bit more refined and a bit more maintained, there is a Mail Cow, which basically does the same but in better. I don't want to diss myself, but this is also, for me, it's fun. I know I'm weird, but if you don't want to invest so much time, just use Mail Cow.
And another solution is MailU. That's even runnable on containers, on Kubernetes.
Ah, okay. Yeah, okay. I don't have a Kubernetes server, unfortunately. All right. Now I get kicked out. Thank you anyway.